listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hello and welcome to A New Geeks at Large. It's only been like 7 months since our last one, which is a record low. It's amazing. We're getting there. We're getting that consistency.
Oh, man. Okay. What could we do to make it worse?
Make it wait. What do you mean?
Could we have like a Patreon and then be like, if we hit 5,000, we'll upload weekly and then never do it. And then antagonize our fan base.
That would imply, one, that we have a fan base. Two, that we would have a fan base to go on Patreon.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, this got real sad all of a sudden, honestly.
I don't know.
All right.
anyway.
Patreons kind of require two fan bases. One that's just casual and one that really likes your stuff. I'm not sure we have either or right now.
That's fair.
Anyway, I'm your host, Taylor. I'm joined by...
Steven.
It needs to get progressively longer in the us. Like the
pensive. I don't know. I was just really thoughtful about
just
that
like,
question.
Steven.
I don't know. I'm just making stupid faces, which is perfect for audio-based platforms.
We all have faces made for radio.
Does Steven know who he is anymore?
I don't know, but who are you?
Oh, my name is Neil, I got it.
High five.
Yay.
Yeah.
We high five for anyone listening.
We've been practicing, ladies and gentlemen.
I looked at his elbow just like
that. He's made it so far.
Neil had to check his script for that first line there.
Yeah.
He's so brave.
I almost flubbed it, guys.
I'm so proud.
Big break. Hashtag blessed, everybody.
Thank you for that one guy from Doctor Who. He's crying. That's me. Anyway, what are we talking about, Neil? What are we talking about on this episode?
The Republican tax plan?
No.
Oh.
Something that maybe even more hated.
Oh, wow. I don't know, man. I guess we're going to talk
no,
about...
No, it's not hated.
I don't know.
Just weirdly divisive.
It's definitely oddly divisive.
To anyone who hasn't looked at the title of this podcast, which I don't know why you wouldn't.
Well, now I'm going to make it like Geeks at Large episode blah, blah, blah. Wham-a-lam-a-ding-dong.
Okay, we're going to talk about The Last Jedi. Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yeah, fucking Star Wars The Last Temptation of Christ.
The title needs to just literally be like Geeks at Large review of Book of Henry.
Oh, shit. It's ass.
I could have told you that.
Yeah,
so, yeah, Last Jedi.
Woo. Yay.
Really, really selling our enthusiasm on the...
it's a fine movie.
Yeah.
All right, podcast over.
Okay.
We'll remain at large.
It was a movie that was shot on celluloid. There were cameras.
There was
and
people
there were
involved.
Sound equipment was involved. And John Williams, they wheeled him out of his coffin, and then he.
Oh no! Don't say that.
It's gonna happen, man.
It's gonna feel bad. No.
It's gonna happen, man.
I mean, yeah, but you don't have to be he's gonna die because he's almost dead.
I mean, Stan Lee is technically further into the grave than John Williams.
I mean, yeah, but he's arguably more active than John Williams.
That's fair. That's
John
fair.
Williams worked on this movie, and then they put him back into his Nora freeze.
they're cryogenic. Just cryogenically freezing the man so they can keep making good scores.
We literally only bring you back if there is a Star Wars or a Spielberg.
You think there's, I'm just imagining this, boardroom thing that, for some reason, Michael Giacchino's just, inexplicably there. I don't know why he'd be there.
I think he's everywhere.
But he's everywhere and nowhere.
Yeah.
He's in the leaves, in the wind.
Yeah. He is the Force.
I feel like you're more like Pocahontas telling me about the colors of the wind.
And we had to go there. All right.
But I'm just saying... That, they're announcing the new Star Wars movie, and he perks up, he's like, huh? And he's like, and we're bringing John back! And he's just like, oh, Okay.
Guess I'll just have to bring me back for Han Solo.
You know, I get all the side projects, man. I get the sloppy seconds. Wham, 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 wham. So, Neil.
Hey.
Could you kind of set the scene for us? What is, you know, in a couple sentences, what is The Last Jedi about?
Okay. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, five-year-old Neil was shown the first Star Wars movie for the very first time. And then after that, I dress up as Obi-Wan Kenobi a whole bunch.
You have, like, one more sentence.
And,
I love how you picked the old guy from the movie to dress up as.
Yeah, because he was fucking awesome. And I had like a blue broomstick, and we also had like a red broomstick. And I'd set up a blanket on something, and then I would hit it, and I would, completely disregarding the fact that Obi-Wan is the one that gets hit by the lightsaber and disappears. But in my case, it was Darth Vader. Anyways, that's The Last Jedi.
Thanks, Neil.
You're welcome.
Anyway, we remain at large. Bye.
Anyways, I've been evicted, so I'll see you guys later.
if you can fill us in on just where we're at when The Last Jedi starts.
Okay, so The Last Jedi starts, I guess, like,
it's in a galaxy far, far away.
Even our actual
a slightly less long time ago, I guess.
Yeah, it has to be, like,
a long time ago, minus about 30 years.
Yeah, I would say
from the last movie?
Well, from the original trilogy.
Oh, but yeah.
What about the last movie? Is that the same thing?
What?
What's it in relation to the Force Awakens?
I'm going to say...
It's a long time ago, minus 6 months?
Something like that, yeah.
I'm gonna say...
two days?
I'm going to say less than a year. It's kind of indeterminate, but it's also kind of not...
Actually, it like starts like right after.
It's pretty much right after, right? It cuts right to Rey and Luke.
Yes, it's like the day after. I was fucking around.
Day after the Force Awakens.
Fucking around. Yeah, it takes place like, you know, literally the
original
day
title was The Force Takes Another Nap.
Mm. I love naps, yeah. so I find that movie relatable.
Yeah.
It takes place, it takes place, like, the minute the Force Awakens ends. How do I wrap up all the threads of The Last Jedi? Rey decides that she is going to go over and find Luke Skywalker to try to bring him back to the Rebellion, or whatever the fuck they're called now.
Technically the Resistance, but they use Rebellion a lot more.
Yeah, it's one of those things from The Force Awakens that I hated, where they just had, like, completely complicated names for, like, just call it this. It's simple.
It's no longer the Sith and the Rebels. It's now the First Order and the Resistance.
Yeah, well, it's the Empire.
Empire, whatever.
Sith was in the prequels and... They kind of name it. Do they even really mention the Sith? And they probably do. If we had fans, they would be like, actually,
yeah.
To be fair.
I would love to read a comment and be like, Neil's voice is dumb. Also, you got this wrong. And it would help us.
And we'd be like, fans.
Well, okay.
If you're listening to this, make sure you leave a comment saying, Neil's voice is dumb.
Yeah.
And what we got wrong.
I'll love it.
I think I can sum up the plot basically with basically the First Order have the Resistance on the run in a comically slow pace on a slow speed chase and through space because they can track through hyperspeed. That's like a new development.
Yeah, that's
and
a good twist.
While this is going on, Rey is trying to enlist Luke and Finn is trying to
basically help escape,
thwart the tracking on the big ship that's going after them. Yes. That's kind of the basic plot with some thematic stuff thrown in there.
You did a much better job than I ever would have.
Yeah. Why are you even here?
Yeah. He's
why are you here?
He's staring daggers at me. So I just want everyone to know.
Not really. Just how I always look at you.
That's the basic plot, but then there's also some like developmental stuff, like interrelations.
It's one of the things where I would argue that like the plot's pretty straightforward, and I think that's one of its strengths.
Yeah,
you know, because it, and like Empire Strikes Back is pretty simple. It's like it starts with them being tracked by the Resistance. That's one of like the actual similarities.
Yeah, there's actually very few similarities.
There was always that fear that the Last Jedi, the Return of the Last Jedi, would just be a mirror copy of Empire Strikes Back after how The Force Awakens was like a remix of A New Hope.
And I famously said multiple times, and I might have even said it on air here, that if I even got a whiff that they were just going to be retelling The Empire Strikes Back, I would leave my seat at a theater and just walk out. And I was not even kidding. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it.
And I would yell at you and cry like Marlon Brando in A Streetcar Named Desire. Ripping my shirt.
Give the ladies a little something to look at.
Right. But you don't look, Neil.
I never look.
I know.
Yeah. Anyways.
Just because you're easily distracted. It's not because of any other thing.
Yeah, that's true. I have horrible ADHD. Anyways. So, yeah.
But it isn't. And that's what's cool about it, is that it actually kind of takes that whole, misconception from the marketing and kind of twists it, you know?
It's a more character-driven Star Wars movie than previous ones.
Yes. It is. I would definitely agree. It's one of those... And going to, like, you know, like, twisting it around, like, changing of perceptions or changing expectations, like,
subverting expectations
is sort of, like, the name of the game for this movie. And, like, it's something that I definitely love because I have also been kind of notorious in my, like, about The Force Awakens. Yeah. And I'm kind of curious to see this one again because I would like to see it again. To see how it holds up, knowing where it goes, because
that's the funny thing is that I feel like the general consensus from people who like the movie, and we'll get to that later.
Yeah,
is that it gets better.
Yeah,
like the more they think about it, the more they sit on it, let it.
That is honestly how I've been feeling about it.
That's how I think all of us have.
Like
talking to you guys.
I came out of the theater with like it's better than Force Awakens. You know, like, and
it sucks, yeah, it's pretty Force Awakens.
Well, like, yeah, like I'm kind of down on Force Awakens mostly. I mean, it's a fine movie. Like, I wouldn't call it bad. And I think, like, both Neil and I have kind of, like, agreed on the idea that it does feel focus group tested into oblivion.
The way I'd basically just describe The Force Awakens is that it's charming, but, like, safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, and my big gripe with Force Awakens, and I think with, I could probably say it about a lot of Star Wars movies, is that I don't find too many of the characters all that interesting. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels more story-driven.
Which, we should preface by saying that you didn't grow up with Star Wars.
I did not grow up with Star Wars. I only recently saw the original trilogy, I think, before Force Awakens. It's kind of prep for that.
You did. You were actually giving me updates, like, when you were watching them. Steven actually did the very brave thing of going online and torrenting the despecialized versions. And I want those copies. I really do. But, like, I'm actually really envious.
I torrented them, but if these ever come out on Blu-ray for sale, I will buy them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, especially considering that Disney now owns most, if not all, of 20th Century Fox properties. That is entirely a possibility.
If they're smart, and Disney is, they know how much people have been salivating for something like that.
But the thing that I worry about is I don't think the original negatives exist anymore.
You think, like, George Lucas destroyed them. Yeah.
So, like, what they've been doing is they've been going back to the laser discs, which are really high quality. You know, you can do a fine job with those.
Those giant frisbee DVDs
that people get really upset if you throw at them because apparently they're collector's items and given to me by my uncle, whatever.
Like, he gave his life to give me this one of Silence of the Lambs, so whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever, Uncle Carl. Fuck you.
The Batman soundtrack.
there's an entire possibility that might happen. I think, I'm not quite sure if Fox owns the rights to that or if George Lucas still owns the rights to those originals.
Well, I also brought up the idea that if they do that, it's probably going to be once this trilogy is done.
Yeah.
So they have, like, all three trilogies, all nine movies.
So you have to buy the prequels.
Disney. Well, that's what they did before.
Yeah. Disney's smart.
I mean, they'll sell them individually, I guess, because that's what they ended up doing. But, like,
if you want all them bonus features.
Well, like, the complete saga, like, they did that before before Disney bought Lucasfilm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the one with the most boring Blu-ray cover ever, which is this kid Anakin, and, like, is it the shadow that looks like...
Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, it's like, wow, what an amazing way to sell people on the Star Wars saga. Yeah.
It's only slightly better than the X-Men First Class posters where they had the outlines of Xavier in the wheelchair, and then they're like poorly photoshopped James McAvoy's fucking face right into the chest of it, and it looks like my first Photoshop project in school.
It's like, what's that?
Because no offense to the handy capable out there, but nothing gets me more excited about a movie than a poster with just a wheelchair on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's like that, and it's so like flat. Yeah. It looks like they just literally like selected Charles Xavier, just like blacked him in with the brush and just like left it.
Oh yeah.
And there's like a gradient.
Yeah.
That's the laziest fucking shit ever.
I like Professor X as much as the next person, but selling me that Professor X is in an X-Men movie is not going to sell me on the movie.
Are you telling me Professor X is in an X-Men movie?
Because remember, he did appear in The Last Stand and X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah.
It's no sign of quality, I
say. Lord.
Yeah. So anyway, back...
We should, let's go around and we can give our general spoiler-free.
Because
we're going to have a spoiler, little bump, and then a spoiler section. Because there's a lot to unpack from this movie.
Yes.
And there'd probably be a discussion about kind of the weird fan base reaction to this movie, too.
Yeah.
So, but we'll start with Steven.
I'm the most outsidery to this franchise. I enjoyed it enough. I would be very curious how I feel about a second viewing of it.
But you did say that like it's growing on you.
It's growing on me. The more I think about it, I do still have my issues. Like I would still kind of disagree with the article titles that say like, you know, it's a misunderstood masterpiece, and it's like, I wouldn't go that far.
I do think there's aspects of it that are misunderstood, though.
Oh, it's definitely misunderstood.
It's
the masterpiece aspect of it that I think is a smidge hyperbolic.
Yeah.
But it's good. I do think it has some pacing issues. I've talked with fellow geeks at large, Casey, about it. I would agree with...
We should say, he said that this was his favorite.
Yeah.
This is his favorite Star Wars movie. And I remember I asked him like a couple days later, and he's like, I will not back down from that. I'm like, good on you, ginger fuck.
I will disagree with that man's opinion of Marty McFly till the day I die, but I will agree with him that there's nothing really like awful about The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
There's really nothing awful about it. And, I would agree with that. I do think it has some pacing issues, and there are a lot of little subplots in there, and there's a couple of them that I just don't find all that interesting. Like, the Finn and Rose stuff doesn't interest me as much, and although this one's more character-driven, I just don't think the characters are that interesting still. Mm-hmm. You know, I know Casey is just listening to this going, but Marty McFly's emails. But...
I do think he has a point, like, to an extent, because it's like, it reminds me of, like, the Plinkett review of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, where, like, you have Indiana Jones, and we like Indiana Jones, but he's also, like, a very basic...
He is a very basic character.
Basic character, and I think I could understand, like, that's enough for people, like, and I do see that with, like, someone like Rey, where it's like...
The actress is Daisy Ridley. She emotes very well. She's a great actress. She does everything you need to.
Mm-hmm.
She deserves the career ahead of her. I do just wish she had more... I wish more Star Wars characters had more distinctive personalities.
Because
when I think on the franchise as a whole, I think of, like, who are the fun, like, out there personalities. I think of, like, maybe C-3PO as kind of being, like, neurotic or, like, you know, kind of... what's the word, like, prissy, I think of that. I think of, like, Han Solo as the roguish type, who's probably more of a cliche these days than he was then.
Well, I mean, like, you have to admit, too, like, a lot of characters were kind of tropes even then.
Yeah.
Even in 1977.
So, but, like, you compare this to, say, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's, like, you look at Guardians of the Galaxy 2, it's like Rocket Raccoon, that's a character. Drax is a character. Star-Lord's a character. Taserface is a character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there's so many more memorable characters in a movie like Guardians of the Galaxy, which does not have decades of lineage to, you know, take advantage of, you know? So,
well, arguably it does if you take it from the comics.
Maybe, but, like, you're introducing all these characters mm-hmm. to an audience that's in a two-hour movie
yeah.
and accomplished what the Avengers kind of required five previous movies to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, point being, I do kind of wish these characters were a bit more interesting, and I think that kind of makes it so that the plot feels a bit slower at times. Overall, I do think it's a good movie. I would definitely watch this one over Force Awakens and Rogue One, probably the Han Solo movie.
Yeah, yeah, I don't want to go in the worst for that one.
Yeah, but anyway, I really enjoyed it. Like, I do enjoy it, and like we've said, the more I think about it, the more I like the things that I mm-hmm. liked about it. Right. Like
the good things are kind
the
of
the good things stand out
taking
more.
Over. The
yeah, yeah, and yeah,
so they don't bother you as much.
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay. Like, Poe's a stronger character in this one. Like, that's something else.
Poe has one of the most distinct arcs
in
the movie.
You guys remember when characters had arcs? Those are fun.
Yeah, when we saw The Last Jedi.
Yeah, I just miss them, that's all. Yeah.
Right.
I wish they'd call.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's basically my opinion. It's pacing issues, but otherwise it's pretty good.
I liked it more. I left it feeling the way that I wish I had after Force Awakens. Because most of my friends walked out of Force Awakens like, that was the best thing ever. And I walked out going, that was good. I liked it. It was fine. Mm-hmm. And the more I sat on it, the more I don't want to say soured on it. Because even then, I don't really dislike the movie.
It's the Spider-Man Homecoming of the Star Wars.
It's the Spider-Man. It is the Spider-Man Homecoming of the
It's a really good
Star
movie,
Wars.
But here's all the fucking things I hate about
I came out of Thor... I came out of The Last Jet... Or I came out of Awakens.
Oh, okay.
I came out of Force Awakens the way, like, Neil came out of Thor the Dark World. And I was like... It's not good. Well, it's not bad, but...
Yeah. And that's fair. I remember my dad and I talking about it, because he and I had a discussion afterwards, and we both came to the conclusion that The Force Awakens is fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like it more than he does, but my dad is also, like, in his mid-60s and just doesn't have time to pretend to like things anymore, and I kind of admire that about him. Not in the way that's like, you know, I voted for Trump because he tells it like it is sort of way, but I mean, like, it's just my dad he's just like, I'm just going to tell you how I feel. It's like, I really don't care anymore. And it's great. Mm-hmm. And my dad and I came to the conclusion, because we both kind of arrived at the same point, that The Force Awakens is fine, but if it didn't have the Star Wars name attached to it, we wouldn't still be talking about it. People would just think, like, it's an enjoyable, cute movie, and then maybe it would get a sequel if it made enough money, mm-hmm. but if it didn't have the Star Wars name attached to it, people would probably forget it after a bit.
So you're saying it's going to be the Valerian?
I don't think anybody remembers Valerian.
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
Funny enough, Valerian is getting a tiny bit of a resurgence just from people, like, towards the end of the year, from people saying... You know, that movie wasn't as bad as we thought it was.
I heard the opening of Valerian is, like, pretty great, but then, like, the rest is just kind
of
like...
I hear the opening of it, and I hear the big market scenes are both, like, wonderful. And then the rest of it is just like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. You would think that for a movie that's, like, you know, that's got the tagline of being the most expensive French film ever made, mm-hmm. you'd expect more.
Right.
Because those Frenchies, you know, those... You'd think that their films would be better, but...
That's all pomp and circumstance. It's all inflation.
Yeah, exactly.
it would have cost the same to make Fifth Element 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Can I be frank and say that it was the most expensive French movie?
Wow.
Because they spent francs.
You're evicted. We're all evicted.
Do they even still spend francs?
Is it francs still?
It's euros.
I think it's euros now.
They're on the euro. Yeah, they're on the euro.
Fuck you, your dated jokes.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Most of the European countries are on the euro now.
You know, I applaud you for
that. You had one job, Steven. You had one job.
But anyways.
Brexit.
But anyways, I guess I was harsher on The Force Awakens than most people, but you know, it wasn't out of a place of hatred, it was a place out of love. Mm-hmm. It was just, I wanted it to be better.
Yeah.
And I think I like Rogue One more than a lot of people do, even though Rogue One also seems to be having a little bit of a resurgence from people. which is kind of nice. It's a film that I maintain has a very troubled first half, but the second half gets a lot better. Yeah. And it's a film where the third act really soars, which I think is the key of any great movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the first part, the first two thirds of it shouldn't be kind of like a little bit of, I don't want to say dull, because I don't find it dull. It's just kind of like...
I find it dull.
I'll say dry.
Yeah. It's pretty dry. Well, I still maintain that, like, The Force Awakens and Rogue One have basically two halves of, like, a great Star Wars movie.
They have the inverse.
And I would argue that you kind of get that in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of takes a little bit of both.
Yeah.
You know, it obviously it continues the characters that most people really liked from The Force Awakens. Because I think Force Awakens has a lot of the heart. And then, like, a lot of the kind of direction and just kind of, like, the focus is in Rogue One.
Yes.
And a lot of the direction and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I think their weaknesses, like, are kind of the antithesis of each other.
They complement each other. In where they fail.
Whatever the synonym of mirror is.
Yeah.
Parallel.
Yeah.
No. That's the same as mirror.
But I think...
Oh, I thought you said synonym.
Or antonym.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Cinnamon buns. Antonym.
Okay. They're delicious. We have some.
Yeah.
But I think I took to Rogue One more than Force Awakens, and probably more than some other people did, because to me, The Force Awakens was just more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not what I wanted. Yeah. I didn't want another movie with the Skywalkers or Han Solo. I wanted another movie that takes place within the Star Wars universe with new characters that are well-written with a plot that I care about. Not too hard to ask, but this is Disney. They're never going to let that happen. So Rogue One gave me more of what I wanted.
Yeah.
Instead of just being, here's another movie about the Skywalkers, it's about a moment that you don't really think about.
Yeah.
It's a different, unique look for the Star Wars franchise, and also it introduces a whole entire shade of gray to the entire thing, rather than just being good and evil. There's a lot of gray in there,
mm-hmm.
and especially in the way that they treat the Rebellion. Because in the previous films, it's definitely like the Rebellion are the good guys. They're so great. Mm-hmm. Even though they're not very good at what they do. They're just not. But Rogue One acknowledges that and also says, actually, the Rebellion, they're kind of snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're people that are going to get what they want from you and then just kind of leave you out to dry.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the way a lot of rebellions are. I think back to the Battle of Algiers.
Or political parties in the real world.
Yeah!
Oh, too real.
But I think back to the movie The Battle of Algiers, which is something that I never thought would be an inspiration for a goddamn Star Wars movie, but here we are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I really was taken by that, was that it wasn't that it radically reinvented the series, but it put it in a different focus. It showed it from a different angle.
Kind of taps into the potential.
Yes, exactly. It was going in the direction that I want the series to go in, which is to focus on a different thing,
mm-hmm.
shine the universe in a new light. And that's, I think that's why I took to Rogue One.
Well, I think that's why a lot of people took to, like, the expanded universe and stuff and a lot of, like, the video games.
Yeah.
That deal with stuff outside of the movies and the Skywalkers.
It's a pretty fun universe, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyways, on to The Last Jedi. The Last Jedi was it was everything I wanted.
Mm.
It has flaws. It definitely has flaws. There are some pacing issues. I like the fact that it takes its time more than The Force Awakens, because The Force Awakens is kind of, you know, I just keep shitting on it. I really don't hate the movie. But The Force Awakens...
Part of my home, 7 out of 10.
But the Force,
8 out of 10, fuck this movie.
I'm never going to live that Homecoming review down. But The Force Awakens comes into a lot of problems that are directly from J.J. Abrams himself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mostly
the mystery box,
but also the really relentless pacing. Now, as an editor, I definitely appreciate the relentless pacing, because you can't deny that that is a film that moves fast.
Yeah. It's like Star Trek 2009.
Exactly. But the problem is, in order to get that pacing going, Abrams cuts out a lot of shit. Like, if you go back and look at the Blu-ray of Star Trek 2009, there's, like, almost 40 minutes of deleted scenes, including a lot of things that explain a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, things that aren't plot holes anymore. They're like, oh, that's why that happened.
Yeah.
But Abrams is so about, we have to keep the pace going. And as a result, the plot suffers from it. Which is why when Force Awakens got a Best Editing nomination at the Oscars, I got kind of annoyed. Because it's like, on surface, it's a really tightly paced film, But if you actually pay attention, you'll
and
know
how the
that
editing helps the story.
The editing, but in this case, the editing hurts the story.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, yeah, like when you actually like look at how the movie, how the editing of the movie services a story, and how it doesn't really do it
exactly
a lot of service.
Yeah,
yeah.
Also, when you think of a franchise that's known for its relentless action pacing, you think of the original Star Trek series.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But that was, yeah, that was something that kind of irritated me, that film got, like, all that. So, of course, you know, people are expecting Abrams pacing with The Last Jedi. And no, The Last Jedi is more...
It's a Rian Johnson
It's a Rian Johnson
movie.
It's a Rian
Johnson-ly paced movie.
It's got the same pacing as, like, Looper and Brick, you know, and I like that.
Yeah.
I like a blockbuster that takes its time. And as a result of that, moments hit harder than if they had just breezed on through. But also, it can result in some pacing issues, which it does have.
And as the first person that brought up pacing issues, I would agree that I would much rather have the pacing issues than another Force Awakens.
Exactly.
I
it's
relish,
a lesser evil. Yeah.
I relish anything that, like, especially like a big budget blockbuster that takes its time.
Because we're so conditioned for stuff being just being super frenetic and crazy.
Yeah, it was,
you know, that I wonder if that's part of, you know, that somewhat backlash we're going to talk about later, with like a lot of people talk about how slow it is and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, cuz that first act is slow.
It is.
And I think we're just not really used to that.
I think some of it is like fans anticipating these like big, admittedly really predictable things, and when the movie kind of goes for something smaller, you know, like it's not as good as
better.
Yeah, it's better, probably better storytelling, admittedly.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So you're saying, Neil?
It's one of the things that I appreciated, one of the very few things I appreciated about the Ghost in the Shell from the beginning of this year. Ghost in the Shell, the one with Scarlett Johansson one, is a blockbuster that takes its time. And that was something that I liked about it, was that it wasn't just relentless. It was it was letting you get steeped into the atmosphere, into the moments of things. It's unfortunate, then, that the characters are not that interesting, and I don't give a shit about the plot of the movie. So, literally,
so
the atmosphere and the setting is all that I've got.
Well, it's kind of like Blade Runner.
Yeah,
I was thinking of Blade Runner,
like,
too.
You know, but, like...
But Blade Runner 2049 is, like, rich with a whole bunch of stuff. And that makes it worth it. Ghost in the Shell 2017 is just, like...
When I was saying Blade Runner in relation to Last Jedi 2.
Yes.
I think there's similarities.
There are.
Between
there
the two
are.
Of them.
They both share runtimes.
They both share runtimes.
Are we talking about the original Blade Runner or 2049 Blade
2049.
Runner?
2049.
Oh, yeah. 2049 Blade Runner and Last Jedi both were very good at subverting expectations.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Because... Like, especially with Blade Runner, because I remember it's a lot like Star Trek 2009, where it's announced, everyone's like, what the fuck, I don't want this.
Yeah.
And then it ends up, oh, I actually did want this, I didn't know.
I loved when I didn't know I wanted something.
Yeah.
So, final thoughts on non-spoiler Last Jedi. I really liked it. I would dare say I almost kind of loved this movie.
Just say you love it, Neil.
Okay, I love the movie, it's fine. I loved it with some take-back. You know, like I love it in spite of some flaws, but, you know, I don't know. I'm so reluctant to just blindly say
it's fine to like it and it's fine to love it.
It's fine to love it because, I mean, we're going to get into, like, stuff. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine to love flawed things, Neil.
Okay, fine. I love
but if
the
you
last...
weren't ready, if you weren't ready to make the jump to love, it's fine to like it, too.
You got there before I could.
That was your first reaction, was like, I like it, I'm not sure if I love it. Taylor was pushing for the love. I was like, no, I gotta be the other guy. I'm the guy on your other shoulder.
Shut up, Steven.
Appreciate it, Steven.
Yeah.
Gary said he loved it, so I win.
So, I feel more comfortable saying, yeah, I kind of love The Last Jedi. It's a pretty great movie. That wraps me up.
Oh, shit, it's my turn.
Yeah, better make it good.
You
never see it coming, even though you host the show.
I know, right? Fuck. Why do I never know that's coming.
It always backfires.
Why am I always last? To avoid parroting, you know, everything, you know, I will say, yeah, like, I felt like it was slow, there was pacing, but I would say I love it, too. Like, and it's one of those that where the more I thought... I think that's the true testament of it, is that I kept thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is a movie
although
that I kept
thinking it might
about.
Be partially because of the the divisiveness.
But yeah, but that made me want to think back, and it made me appreciate all the stuff.
It makes me wonder, is Disney intentionally trying to sully the audience's favor because they're trying to pull a Grand Theft Auto Rockstar Games lean into the controversy scheme?
Oh, yeah, they totally started the hashtag Jedi, Last Jedi awful. I said hashtag awful hashtag.
I will say, Disney's response to this has actually been pretty great, where they're pretty much like, no, we stand behind Rian Johnson, y'all can go fuck yourselves.
I would hope so, they gave him his own trilogy.
Yeah, no, they're basically like, we had confidence in
oh,
what
shit,
you did.
Oh, shit, Ryan, I'm sorry.
We stand behind Rian Johnson.
Some ho-ho. Fucking neckbeard didn't like your movie. Hey Ryan, how's it going?
Have you guys seen that picture of Disney making its way up the arcade ladder, and it's literally like the Mortal Kombat like yes. totem, and it's like God. Lucasfilms, Marvel, 20th Century Fox, and then like the next one's like DC or something. It's just like Mickey Mouse like going up the ladder.
I did see that. It's pretty great. Fox.
But yeah, back to Taylor's thoughts though.
Yes, I would say my favorite thing about it is that I think it's a very thematic movie.
Oh, yeah.
It has a lot of themes. It does a lot of great character stuff. That I think is great character stuff.
No.
it does subvert expectations a lot. I think, you know, you hear a lot of people that are disappointed in where characters go. And then I thought about it, and it's just, it's a more interesting movie with what they do.
Yes.
There's
more substance to it. I think a lot of what fans were expecting were kind of things that, admittedly, I was expecting when I saw some kind of red herrings in the early parts of the movie. But
that's the thing too. That's why it's also like 2049.
It would go. It would kind of like if they did that. Like yeah, maybe like you know, like Skywalker nerds can like you know fap to it, but it wouldn't be in keeping with the themes of the movie though. Mm-hmm. So it'd be kind of inconsistent.
Right.
But, yeah.
And like you could tell that it's made by a passionate filmmaker, mm-hmm. passionate screenwriter. And Rian Johnson, who does, despite what some people may think, actually loves the franchise.
Oh, yeah.
And he wants it to move forward. Like, it's a very franchise progressive movie. It's the kind of the movie that the mainline Star Wars movies need.
Yes.
You know, to just kind of like, here's where we're going. We can move on. Like, they just kind of threw off the chains.
Yes.
And just, here we go. So,
not to keep interrupting your review.
Really.
I'm trying to remember where I heard it, and I want to say it's Mark Bernardin from Fat Man on Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say like before this movie came out and before I saw it, I felt like he kind of encapsulated my opinion of the Star Wars franchise in that it's a franchise that like creatively is kind of always looking backwards.
Yeah.
You know, like they were kind of just constantly going to like Rogue One and like, how can we throw Han Solo into this? How can we throw in the recognizable mm-hmm. characters? And what I do really like about this movie is that it's kind of like, let's look forward. Let's stop, you know, like, holding on. Well, like let's stop relying or depending on nostalgia,
yeah.
you know, like let's, yeah,
right.
Take this somewhere else. So.
Agreed.
Well, and that's why it's kind of this interesting. It's like the next one after Rogue One, which like was still had some of that, mm-hmm. obviously, because like Leia cameos in it. It's technically a prequel to the first Star Wars movie, but like there is that like untapped potential where they do show new characters, you know, that are good characters and not so good characters.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of like Star Wars is learning from kind of like their Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like I've heard comparisons to like from between the Marvel and the DC movies, whereas like the DC movies has all these weird Easter eggs that like that are actually kind of pivotal. Like they mention things like the new gods and dark side and stuff.
They expect you to know the material.
So, like, if you don't know any of that shit, like you're...
Like Neil.
Like, if you don't know that stuff, you're kind of sitting there scratching your head going, am I supposed to know that? And it turns out you kind of are.
Or, more importantly, not just know about it, but care about it.
Yeah. So, it's like, you kind of are with those movies, whereas the Marvel ones, all the Easter egg stuff is just completely superfluous, and it's just there to, like, add to the experience if you're aware of it. But then, otherwise, it's like, whatever.
Right.
You know, like, they name-drop Stephen Strange in Winter Soldier, and...
That's the one I always think about.
I know, yeah. But it's a nothing moment, if you don't know who Stephen Strange is in Winter Soldier, it's like
Stephen Strange.
It's like, oh, I don't know who that is, but okay, whatever. Moving on.
Or like when they mention Wakanda.
Yeah, Wakanda.
It's like, oh, if you don't know Wakanda is, then that's fine.
Yeah,
it's just a place.
Yeah. Or even like in the first Captain America movie where they say like, oh, this shield's made of vibranium.
Yeah.
And it's like, so anybody who kind of knows vibranium goes like, oh, that's a Black Panther reference. That's you know, like, but yeah, so. Back to you, Taylor. But it's instead of looking backwards, they're now kind of looking forward and not relying on nostalgia and Easter eggs and stuff like that to kind of keep people invested.
And it's more meaningful. Like, I hear a lot of these complaints, and it's just like, you know, like, on paper, in the moment, it's... They want, like, some of the stuff that would be in, like, The Force Awakens, which, again, I'm pretty sure I like that movie the best out of the three of us.
You do.
I do.
There's no doubt about that.
I still really enjoy that movie, and I own it. But I'm willing to admit that it's very nostalgia-driven, it's very mystery-boxy, there's a lot of stuff that just kind of brought up, like, ooh, the mystery! And so much of this is just... So much of The Last Jedi is just... I guess spoiler, like mild spoilers before we get into heavy spoilers, is just kind of looking at that and going, enough.
Yeah.
Well, there's a reference to the New Hope, a reference to you know, like the like beginning parts of the New Hope, later on in Last Jedi, and it's like, oh, it's an Easter egg, but you know, it's actually pivotal to the movie, and it kind of provides more of an emotional, like, you know,
at the very end with the
with the hologram.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
And but at the same time, you don't need to have seen New Hope to get what they're going with that. But it's an Easter egg that actually is relevant and moves the plot forward. Like, that's the way to do
it.
That's the way to do Easter eggs.
Narratively relevant.
That is the way to do it.
It's a bit like the Easter eggs in Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
Where even if you don't know what that voice clip is, you're going to find out. But if you know it, it means you're just, like, maybe two steps ahead of the audience, but not for long.
Or if you don't remember it. Like, I didn't really remember it when I saw it, but it's like, oh... Harrison Ford has a connection with this person.
Yeah, and exactly.
So, like, I didn't really know, and it's an Easter egg, so it's an added thing for people like Neil who love Blade Runner, but it makes enough sense.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, if you don't know it, you're going to know it.
Yeah.
So that's how you should do it.
Last Jedi handles the nostalgia with a bit more nuance and a bit more, like,
well,
more
and at times it almost, like, just throws away nostalgia.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely throws away nostalgia, but it uses it strategically.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Which
Agreed.
Just shows how good Rian Johnson is.
Poor Rian Johnson.
Go see Looper, everybody.
Yeah, watch Looper, watch Brit.
Poor Rian Johnson, he's getting his own Star Wars trilogy.
But he's just getting, like, his ass handed to him on Twitter, and I'm like, man, you don't, like... Like, the success of Star Wars could not have happened to, like, a nicer, better guy.
He's got, like, the movies.
He's got a movie that has, like, a 92% Rotten Tomatoes. How can you win and lose at the same time?
I know, exactly.
Yeah, like, I'm sure Rian Johnson's fine. He got to make a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, and he's getting
to make the biggest. It's the biggest and one of the most acclaimed movies of the year, and somehow he still manages to lose.
Yeah.
How?
Welcome to the world we live in.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll then kind of jump into spoilers.
Fucking hated this movie. Here's $12. Give me that stuffed porg.
12 out of 10. I fucking hated this movie. Anyway, so if you haven't seen Last Jedi, spoilers, fuck off. Are you gone? Okay, good. Get out of here. Anyway.
Where'd Neil go?
Neil, you saw with us. Get back here.
Oh, fuck. It's okay. We didn't need those people anyways. I hope they call, though.
I hope they like it.
Mm-hmm. Remember to comment in the comments that my voice sucks.
Yeah.
All right.
Make sure if you don't like the movie to, like, at least not use that awful, like, hashtag Last Jedi awful.
Oh, God.
Don't do that. And also make sure all your spelling is good.
Also, come up with more creative hashtags.
Yeah.
Hashtag Carrie Fisher deserves better.
Hash browns, not
hashtag. Another one.
Hashtag worst Jedi.
Hashtag hash browns.
Oh, God.
Hashtag worse than the Phantom Menace.
Is that Carrie Fisher? Hashtag real?
Yes. Oh. One of the ones I read, because I read Neil, like, because on Twitter it's like, some people really, really hated The Last Jedi. And I was like, oh, this is going to be good. And just flipping through it, I was reading them to them. Like, half of them had spelling errors and were hilarious.
The only thing worse than their takes was their grammar. Yep. I will say that.
Yeah. They had like 7 hashtags and they're all like made up and they're the only ones that used them.
Beforehand, the rest of it, like, that stuff is just like, okay, whatever. Like, I just kind of imagine it in Dale Gribble's voice, right, like King of the Hill. It doesn't mean anything anymore. It's just you're irrelevant. But the Carrie Fisher deserves better one is cheap.
I would bet money that at least one of those takes said something like Frank Oz is rolling around in his grave right now, even though he's not dead.
Yeah,
like, he's clearly not dead.
R.I.P. Mark Hamill. Some shit like that. Let's start by saying that. Mark Hamill was fucking amazing in this.
I would say it's the best performance I've ever seen from
him. Yeah, like, it's... Yeah.
It's up there.
Think about the Joker.
Joker. He's had some really great Joker performances.
Okay,
Master of the Fantastic.
Like, live action.
Okay, live action.
Because, like, Mark Hamill's always kind of had a bit of a reputation as, like, spotty. Like, he's good, but he's never, like, great in a lot of things.
He's kind of like, he's got, like, Christopher Reeve syndrome, where he didn't really get too many other roles.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of which, he was in Village of the Damned with Christopher Reeves. Mark Hamill was.
Oh, God.
Remember that?
Oh, I try to forget that movie.
That movie's awful.
It really is. Watch the original. It's fucking great.
So Mark Hamill in this, I would say, like, one of his best performances, I think a lot, and also one of the probably most controversial aspects of the movie, because, you know, I guess people just had it in their head of, like, this is what, you know, Luke Skywalker in his 50s, 60s would be like. And that didn't happen. This is basically, like, I feel like a lot of the dislike for this movie is just my fan theories didn't happen, so it sucks.
Also, I think it's anticipation that, like, okay, well, this is an older, like, you know, more learned Mark or Luke Skywalker. So, like, I think, like, especially kind of like near the end, I think people were kind of expecting that to go differently, and they were expecting Luke Skywalker to, like, go Super Saiyan on everybody or something.
Well, that's the thing that bugs the shit out of me, because, so, like, now that we're in spoiler territory, so basically the third act climax of the movie is, funny enough, kind of a parallel of the Battle of Hoth from Empire, and it's one of the little things that I kind of like that they did.
Yeah.
And so they have, like, the not AT-ATs, and they're about to, like, blast the laser into the Rebel Resistance base, and Luke just shows up, and he's just, like, there, and he has a nice little scene with Leia. It's great.
That's fantastic.
You know, he walks out there. Fucking Rian Johnson and his cinematographer are killing it with the compositions, because they're
there's
just shots of him where it's, like, super zoomed out, and just, like, here's little figure of Luke and shit, and it's great, because this movie's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is.
This is, like, there's shit in this movie in terms of cinematography that you just don't see in movies anymore.
Yeah.
Just, like, those extreme compositions that are extreme, like, off in the corner, and that's where your eye's supposed to go.
There are a number of, like, Scorsese zooms in there, too, that I was really surprised by. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll always go to bat for Steve Yedlin. He's a great cinematographer. Like, I remember, like, he's been Rian Johnson's cinematographer for pretty much the entirety of Johnson's career.
Right.
And it definitely shows, like, you know, especially, like, in some of his earlier movies, you get some pretty crazy compositions. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, Steve Yedlin is there to just, like, you know, just give him ideas, or to just, like, egg him on.
Right.
And it's really paid off.
Yeah. So, I guess we're kind of, jumping the gun and going right to the climax. But I think Luke is, like, the big thing in this movie. So I guess we'll just talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, like, he comes out. He's kind of dressed like, you know, you could tell he's, like, cut his hair a little bit. He looks more like Return of the Jedi Luke. He's dressed all in black. And he basically comes out there to confront. He does have a bit of a Super Saiyan moment.
He does.
They shoot the lasers at him. Smoke rises. It's such an anime fucking thing, and it's kind of amazing.
Well, the anticipation is that, like earlier in the movie, Luke Skywalker says something like, what do you think I'm going to do? I'm just going to pick up a laser sword and then just take on the whole, like, Empire myself. You know, and then at the end, it kind of looks like that's exactly what he's going to do. And I think that's kind of part of it. Like, a lot of people were expecting that. They thought, like, this would be awesome. This is like, you know, this is like Superman Prime or super, like, you know, like, he's going
to
be ridiculously powerful.
You to death.
He's going to kill all of these things with a lightsaber. And it's like,
can I also just say, I love that he called it a laser sword.
He called it a laser sword, which is like the off-brand lightsaber.
Well, yeah, because it's such a, like, dismissive thing for, like, I could imagine just the fanboys going, you, Luke,
dad has a lightsaber.
He's a jaded, like, this movie made Luke Skywalker a bit more of a flawed character.
It made him interesting.
I would argue, like, he was a lot, when I talk about, like, uninteresting characters in Star Wars, Luke Skywalker in the first one, like, okay, whatever, but he got more interesting as the series went on. And that was, like, what I'm still hoping for Rey. Like, I hope, she has a more distinctive personality.
I would argue that Rey does take steps in this one.
Yes.
Like, she does get
They
have more fun with her. She makes mistakes.
Yes, she does.
You know, and I think her, like, the script allows her to, like, earn more of her cool moments.
Oh, yeah. I would agree.
Right. So, as we were talking about, a lot of people seem to complain that, like, oh, Luke doesn't go fucking, you know, bamf on AT-ATs. And it's like, why? Like, here's my thing for that, is that I feel like those people don't get, like, I'm going to make some, like, definitive things here. Like they don't get it. Like, because I think about Return of the Jedi, going back to Return of the Jedi, the climax of that scene between Luke, Vader, and Palpatine isn't when they're actually fighting with the lightsabers.
Yeah.
It's when he cuts off Vader's hand, and there's that whole, like, you know, I'll never join you, and, like, the yelling and, you know, the actual dialogue, character-driven stuff.
The conflict isn't the fight. The conflict is whether
the emotions behind the fight.
And whether, like, Luke will join the dark side or whether Darth Vader will actually murder his son.
Well, and saving his dad.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing. And, that's what happens. And it's so much more, like, it's so much more satisfying. And I feel like this movie is so much more satisfying for what they do with Luke, which is basically, you know, he fights Kylo. Well, like, fights, quote-unquote. He kind of, like, dodges and kind of fucks with him a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just to kind of illustrate how still of a hothead, and he's like Hotspur from Shakespeare plays, you know, where he's just driven by anger and hate, blah, blah, blah. And then we learn that he was actually Luke was an astral projection, essentially.
Which correct me if I'm wrong, is that not supposed to be, like, the most powerful use of the Force?
Yeah.
Like, he basically becomes God-tier.
Yeah. But people kind of, that goes over their head.
No, of course. Of course it does. Because we can't have nice things.
It's like he did, like, the most, like, awesome thing without ever really using his lightsaber.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I thought you were talking about earlier when you were talking about, like, that, like, little moment was when he was on the little, like, cliff looking out and you had the two suns.
Oh, yeah.
Which someone pointed out to me is, like, that they might actually be, like, instead of in A New Hope, where they're both setting, that in this one, it's, like, one's setting and one's rising, which is kind of an interesting little thematic thing, because it's, like, Luke's setting, Rey's rising.
I wouldn't put that past Rian Johnson.
And I think that's part of the thematic stuff that I like about this.
Well, also, it parallels with A New Hope, because there's that iconic shot of Luke kind of looking out at the sunsets, and he's like, wow, where do I go in life? What is my position in this? Like, what do I do?
Mm.
And then in this one, it's kind of like he bookends
his
journey.
It's
the last thing he sees.
It's fucking great.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It is. I gotta be honest. Like, all the people, like, I think
And we should say, if you don't like the movie, that's fine.
That's totally fine.
It's not perfect.
I just want you to say, like, I just want you to have, like, better reasons than some of these people. Like, if you just don't like it because, you know, you found it boring or whatever, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying, like, the people that are like, Luke needed to do this. Come on, guys.
I think it kind of sucks to hate a movie for what it could have been.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
I think that was, like, a big expectation. And when we talk about subverting expectations and red herrings, like, when we see that island that Luke Skywalker's on, and you see, like, the submerged X-Wing.
Yeah.
So that was, like, a red herring. Everyone thought, oh, he's going to fly there, and he's going to, like, lift the X-Wing out using the Force, kind of like in Empire, or was it Return of the Jedi?
Well, we never see him do it in Empire.
Okay.
Remember, it's Yoda that does it.
Yeah. So he's like, oh, he's going to do that, and he's going to take the X-Wing there. And that's the red herring. You think, like, oh, he took the X-Wing to get to that planet, but no, he just astrally projected himself.
Well, they even have, like, a little thing for, like, how did he get in here?
Yeah,
exactly.
Like a little line.
But
do either of you guys remember what Leia's reaction was when he kissed her forehead?
I don't.
Like, was she aware that he wasn't really there? Like,
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I don't think she was. I don't think she was aware that he wasn't there.
Yeah,
because she hasn't seen him in so long, anyway.
Yeah.
So
right. Well, I mean, if an astral projection kisses you and you don't feel lips on you, like, would you be suspicious?
That's interesting.
I mean, that's one of the plot holes. I
was kind of wondering, like, what did she like? Kind of give a knowing look, like I know what he's doing.
Because he also hands her like the charm things.
Yeah.
Which, was that like Han Solo's thing?
Yeah, they're in the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, right? That's what I thought. Like, yeah. That's a little, like, very subtle thing that I don't even really give lip service to.
Yeah.
It's really just a visual thing. So, but...
It's so weird because I think part of the reaction to this film that it's getting is from, like, you can say it's mostly from, like, the hardcore, like, diehard Star Wars fans.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening isn't necessarily, I don't think, and this is just like, this is my professional opinion. I don't get paid for it, so technically it's a lie. I think it's not necessarily that they hate the movie, because I guess they do. But I think what it is it represents a loss of control over the series. Because you have to understand, for a lot of these people, Star Wars has always been there for them. Star Wars is their thing. It's a constant. It's always been there for them. Through sickness and in health, Star Wars has been there. When you get married, Star Wars is there. And they've always kind of been able to rely on that because Star Wars was reliable. Even when the prequels were shitty, they were still reliable in that they were going to be shitty. But you always had the originals to look back on. And with Force Awakens, people love it so much because it's familiar.
Yeah.
Like even Han Solo, you know, 30 years on from the last movie, he gets clean, he's a good guy, you know, he's a father now.
Kind of a
deadbeat dad. But then he goes back to leaving his family and back to his smuggling ways. Yeah. So that's familiar. That's the Han people know.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Luke Skywalker, who
the last we saw, he was like young Luke Skywalker, dressed in black, having burnt his father's corpse.
Yeah, exactly.
And partied with teddy bears.
And that's sort of my problem with Luke. I like Luke a lot, and he is pretty interesting. But overall, by the end of that series, Luke is intergalactic good boy.
Yeah.
That's not interesting to me.
If he was the same character, it would not be interesting.
He's science fiction Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. But
no,
but
his dad is.
Okay, fair. But he's... You know, if you stay like that for 30 years, that's boring. I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
The fact that they actually changed Luke up, and a lot of people complain about his action of, spoiler alert, I don't give a fuck, of him almost killing Kylo Ren. It's like, it's so out of character for him. You know, he was the guy who saw good in Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, it is out of character for him. The movie acknowledges it.
Yeah.
Because,
he
made a mistake.
He makes a mistake. His action is out of character, but his reaction to it is in character.
Yeah.
He's ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
He's horrified at what he did. He puts himself out in exile for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
That's very Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he has to go atone for his sins for what he did. That's why he's ashamed of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in character. So, like, that's the whole point. Luke failed his own self.
Yeah.
And he's dealing with that failure.
It's what Superman would do in the same situation. Like, and Superman makes mistakes, so it's I mean, that's a way to take it. You know, it's
right.
He's still good boy. Technically, he's just cursed with the weight of this one mistake that he made.
A mistake.
Yeah, he's fallible.
He made a mistake, and he knows it. He's dealing with that, the repercussions of that. So. The Force Awakens set up a whole bunch of stuff.
Right.
All those damn mystery boxes, half of them got opened, the rest of them were unopened, and they're like, well, you'll just have to find out in the next movie, which I fucking hate.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that so goddamn much. Use the time that you're given. Don't just rely on getting another movie to solve your stupid shit.
Mm-hmm.
Do it there.
Well, that's when you know you're working with someone who works in movies and who works a lot of times in TV.
Yes, and like J.J. Abrams is like a pioneer.
Damon Lindelof,
yes,
is another one.
But Rian Johnson is, you know, aside from, you know, episodes of Breaking Bad here and there, He's a film guy.
Yeah, he gave you Breaking Bad, fuckers.
Yeah, I know. He
gave some
you,
great episodes.
He gave
of Breaking
you Ozymandias, okay? Shut your fucking mouth. But the Force Awakens had like a trajectory that it was laying out. It had an itinerary of where it wanted to go. And I'll be honest, I was like, okay, well, yeah, this would be fine. But I wasn't really interested until I heard that Rian Johnson was taking over. And then I was like, this will be interesting. Because if there was one person that I did want to take over for Star Wars, it was Rian Johnson. I was familiar with his work. I've been a fan for a while. He's a guy who is really good at twisting genre conventions to fit his own needs. He's a guy who can really steep himself into a genre, He's a huge dork.
Also, he can ground something science fiction based, like Looper.
Exactly. But also, like, he knows how characters talk in genres.
Yeah.
Like, you know, watch Looper and then you watch Brick.
Brick, yeah.
Brick is like a hard-boiled noir that is sometimes impenetrable because that's how they are.
Yeah,
a lot of times they're just, it's easy to get lost in them. But then you compare that to Looper where, you know, it's got some sci-fi trappings in it. You know, people in there talk like it's a mafia sci-fi film. Mm-hmm. He understands how characters in worlds talk.
That was just a little shout out to Casey. I had a couple screenwriting classes with his, I don't know if he's still living with him, Taylor Gillespie?
I forget. He might be. Casey, leave a comment if you're still living with Taylor.
Tell me my voice is dumb.
I had a few screenwriting classes with him, Casey's friend, and my Facebook friend. And he was really good about that. Like, he would have, like, he had one script that was, like, it took place in kind of, like, it was, like, 1920s jazz theme. And, like, he really nailed dial. Like, he was really good about that.
Yeah.
So, I've always admired that about, like, about Taylor. That was something that, like, I'm not really too good at. I tend to stick to modern times. Like, just toying with accents is something that I try.
Yeah.
I did want to give a shout out to another reason why we should love Rian Johnson and appreciate him is that I don't know if it was at San Diego Comic-Con or another con, but there was people waiting in line and that guy went around and greeted everybody.
Yeah.
He is, that guy fucking loves you all. Treat him with respect.
Rian
please.
Johnson is a class act. He really is. That's why I keep repeating that mantra of like all this success and whatnot could not have happened to a more deserving, nice guy.
Yeah.
Also, his girlfriend, Karina Longworth, hosts another podcast. Not to pump better podcasts,
it's going to happen anytime we talk about any podcast.
It's true. It's true. She hosts a podcast called You Must Remember This, which is about the early 20th century of Hollywood, and it gets into like the real nitty gritty dirty stuff, and it's like really scandalous and juicy, and also really harrowing sometimes. Because I don't know if you knew this, the Harvey Weinstein scandal stuff, not new.
No. Oh no, yeah.
Like there's an entire series about Louis B. Mayer, arguably one of the biggest monsters in Hollywood history, and like. I don't want to blow it out of proportion and say, like, oh, Weinstein doesn't even hold a candle to him. But
was the early 20th century.
That was the early 20th century where
there were so many Harvey Weinsteins.
Exactly.
That there aren't probably a bunch of Harvey Weinsteins out there now.
Yeah.
But there wasn't, like, social media.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's a big reason why Harvey Weinstein's thing even really came to light.
Exactly.
Because of social media.
But Rian Johnson shows up on there every once in a while, you know, to be on his girlfriend's podcast.
I thought you were going to say, Rian Johnson is not Harvey Weinstein.
He is not. That man asks...
Fun fact of the day.
That man asks for consent even when he... That man asks for consent when he doesn't cheat on his girlfriend, because he's a great guy. Yeah. But he shows up on that podcast every once in a while, and he does voices. Like, he does a pretty good John Huston, the director, so that's
John
pretty good. But if you ever want to get started on You Must Remember This, there's like a 12-part on Charles Manson's Hollywood, which I highly recommend. It'll just take you right into the best of the podcast. So anyways, but yeah, Rian Johnson is a class act guy, and he was really who I was hoping that it would go to. So when they mentioned that he was doing it, I was like, shit, yes, shit, yes. But, like, Rian Johnson doesn't care about all that shit.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about the mystery boxes. He knows that...
He wants to tell you meaningful stuff.
He cares about themes. He cares about characters that you like.
And that's the movie's strengths, are the characters and the themes.
And I gotta be honest, like, listening to what people wanted out of the Last Jedi based on the trajectory of The Force Awakens, I gotta tell you guys, I was not interested in that movie. Mm-hmm. I do not give a shit. Like, sure, it'll play into what fans want, but... if you've ever been in the Harry Potter fandom, I gotta tell you, sometimes the fans are wrong. Sometimes the fans are dumb. What they want is dumb.
That's every fandom.
To be fair, that is most fandoms. But as the
person that liked Force Awakens the least, like, yeah, it did not get me excited for a sequel. I did not want another sequel that was gonna be like all about the Skywalkers and all of the questions that it left open were questions I honestly just kind of didn't want answered. Like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't care what the answer was. And all of the theories that I've seen of, like, what they wanted from Last Jedi, to me, was exactly what I was expecting Last Jedi to be.
Exactly.
Which means it's super predictable. Yeah. And I know dick about Star Wars.
And that's another thing about... Like I said, you know, with the fandom, it's a loss of control.
Yeah.
Usually, they've been able to pick up on who's going to be what. They've been doing it for decades.
Yeah.
And for The Last Jedi to basically put a stop sign in front of their faces and say, we're not doing that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're moving forward now. We can't keep doing this. And I can understand that being a lot for some people, but to react in this way is fucking childish. It's sort of like... It's a bit like when Stephen Moffat took over for Doctor Who, and admittedly there was a backlash of it because Moffat changed a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there's with the changing of hands between Russell T. Davies and Stephen Moffat, you could definitely say that there was sins on both sides.
Yeah,
but I felt like
it was a messy divorce.
It was a messy divorce, but I always argued that like Russell T. Davies was the most like petty.
Oh yeah,
like oh man. You know, David Tennant's going to regenerate. He's going to say, I don't want to go. So that's how you literally start the next guy. Hand him this. And I'm glad that time has been super kind to Matt Smith as the Doctor.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I don't know. I haven't been super critical of, like, Stephen Moffat's whole thing and stuff.
Yeah.
But I know there's a lot of people that do not like him stuff.
Yeah.
And I think in his later seasons, there's probably way more stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
And, you know, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know...
But there's a way to handle it.
Yeah, exactly. And I posted on Twitter. If anybody follows me on Twitter, which you don't, and that's fine.
What's your handle?
It's at Neil Logan Butler.
Ha-ha.
N-E-I-L. My therapist still spells it N-E-A-L, and I'm like, how do you not... It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Must be stated that Butler only has one T, so...
I spent a good number of years in elementary school refuting that one, trust me. But this reaction is so horrid, and I said on Twitter that, like, I can tell you about the first time that we couldn't pay our rent on time. And that is like you know, me having to scramble around getting all the funds together, trying to figure out how to do it, or else we would get in trouble, was one of the most startling, frustrating, and honestly frightening moments of my life, of my adult life, you know, getting thrust into that. It was terrifying. And we'd only been here for like a month, and we had fucked it up. And that was a terrifying experience. To think that that feeling that I had when we couldn't pay our rent on time is the same feeling that some people are experiencing with a goddamn Star Wars movie blows my goddamn mind. Go ahead and toilet flush me if you will. But that's how I feel.
Anyway, like, we'll remain at large. Bye.
But that's how I feel about it. It's
right.
Just like how... Like, those things are not even remotely similar. If that's how you honestly feel, yeah. I can guarantee you, A, you've never touched a boob in your life. And B, you have a lot of growing up to do.
Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
shit.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, is... What gets me is when people say it's the worst Star Wars movie.
Yeah, it's a, get real?
I'm like, that's like people saying, like, Rocky Balboa is, like, the worst Rocky.
I haven't even seen the prequels, and I know like, people are full of shit.
I was about to say, like, have you seen Attack of the Clones? That's, like, a soul crusher.
Well,
right
a lot
there.
Of people have been saying that, like, Revenge of the Sith is better than... I would rank Revenge of the Sith above Last Jedi.
There are only two things that Revenge of the Sith is better than, and that's The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. End of list.
And even then, it's kind of a neck-and-neck thing.
Yeah, that's
I think Tuberculosis is better than Revenge of the Sith.
Wow.
You haven't even seen it.
He's seen neither Revenge of the Sith nor Tuberculosis.
Well, there was that time when Steven built a time machine and went back to the 1800s and witnessed tuberculosis.
Oh, yeah.
That was an awkward week and a half.
Oh, yeah. That was a weird spring break.
Yeah, how is your engagement to Lilibeth going?
Oh, man. They do not believe in annulment.
Joke of the podcast.
The rickets are coming to take my children, so how are you guys?
It's rickety cricket.
Oh, God. So, that's
the thing about syphilis is it's basically marriage. You're not getting it from anywhere else.
So speaking of, like, the things that Force Awakens kind of brings up and just kind of, like, leaves out in the air, mm-hmm. that The Last Jedi forcibly just goes, fuck that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Snoke.
All right, Snoke. Snoke was stupid, and The Last Jedi recognized that.
Okay, full disclosure. I really like Snoke in this movie, because a lot of it is just... It's not because he's a well-defined character or anything.
He's Palpatine light.
Well, he's Palpatine light, but the movie recognizes that.
Yeah.
And... when people talk about Revenge of the Sith, they always talk about Palpatine in that movie.
Yeah, because he's the best goddamn character in there.
He's like the one good thing about fucking Revenge of the Sith.
Aside from John Williams' score.
Aside from John Williams' score that was wasted on a good movie and a bad movie. That just like never stops. Goes for like...
I'm just humming... John Williams scores that are
like fucking E.T.
Yeah, it was E.T.
do the fucking Anakin Padme thing. The love theme.
Oh, na 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 na.
I hate sand. Apparently, that's fucking better than goddamn Last Jedi.
Goddamn.
Fuck you, fucking people that say that.
I know.
Watch the fucking prequels again.
Yeah, I know. Once again, haven't touched a boob, probably. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but also, there's something wrong with that.
You ruined Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. But.
So, Snoke.
Snoke.
So, Andy, what I really like about it is that, one, I like how they just, like, hard light on him. Like, I like how he's filmed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, his throne room's cool. They just film him. They don't make him all shadowy and dumb. And
it's a bit of a risk, I gotta be honest.
I've heard once a week he and Thanos meet and talk about chairs. Chairs and big empty spaces.
Believe it or not, big fans of IKEA.
What's the rate of rotation that you use on your chair? Do you like to turn around slowly or a little faster?
Thanos is like, wait a minute, you actually look at the door coming in? I just look out into space.
It's fucking space, man. You're in space.
I like
use it.
I like to turn counterclockwise.
Yeah. But, like, what really gets it, what I get out of it is just Andy Serkis just kind of being scenery chewingly evil.
Andy Serkis is chewing up the scenery, and I'm giving him the ketchup because he's doing such a great
job. It's so fun, and, like, I get that he's, like, super, like, there's nothing there. It's like eating cotton candy.
Yeah.
It's sugary, it's sweet, but there's nothing.
Yeah, well, it's
also
weird.
Like, why mocap a dude when all he does is sit in a chair the whole movie?
Because it's Andy Serkis.
Like, why mocap a dude?
I don't know. I don't know why they didn't just do something with his prosthetics or something. Yeah. But also, like, it still looked really good, so I'm not going to complain too much. That was a risk that paid off by paying, like,
I'd be fine with that in a Star Wars movie if it was other things. Yeah.
I don't know, it just seems like a weird thing, like, when
even
I think
like
about
Trek,
it.
Star Trek, I would be kind
it's
of
like here, get all these dots on you and everything, put on the leotard. All right, cool, what am I going to do? Just sit in that chair.
You do realize that Andy Serkis, like, lives in a fucking mocap suit.
I know.
So he's fine.
Yeah.
he's gonna die, and they're gonna bury. They're gonna dig up his coffin.
Wife, and they have to do. Let me get on the suit, honey.
He's gonna die. They're gonna dig up his coffin. They're gonna open it up, and he's gonna have like the ping pong balls on his skeleton.
Yeah, it's gonna be a scene. This is gonna be like some random scene in Black Panther where he's just mocap.
Yeah,
him, but it's mocap.
And you know what? It'll be great.
They need to.
He's mocapped as Michael B. Jordan.
Oh my god. Oh. Whitewashing.
Yeah.
So anyway, Snoke. Snoke dies.
Snoke dies, and it's glorious, and it's like the movie kind of acknowledges, like, the movie acknowledges, like, Snoke was a bad idea. Sorry, yeah. Guys. And I don't know why people are, like, upset about Snoke, because Snoke was dumb from The Force Awakens. He wasn't interesting then. He was a stunning visual, I will say. Like, that first time I saw that hologram of him, I'm like, wow.
But you can get the same effect from, like, Joy from Blade Runner 2049.
Which was like, better.
And which also, came later.
And also had the horrible heartbreak that comes with it.
I'm still not
Joy. Joy from Blade Runner 2049 was more effective of an evil hologram than Snoke was.
Yeah, exactly.
Force Awakens.
The good guy love interest.
And even then, she doesn't...
a better...
And even then, as a hologram, she doesn't destroy planets. She destroys hearts.
Yeah.
But anyways, I don't know why people are, like, upset about Snoke. Snoke was a bad idea from the beginning, and you have The Force Awakens to blame.
It's at best, he was a bland choice from the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's another thing that needs to be kind of... Like, we're lumping all... Like, people are lumping all the blame on The Last Jedi and less on The Force Awakens for bringing up... Yeah. Dumb things.
Well, they bring it up, and it's like they bring it up, and then they don't do anything with it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like the Force Awakens basically just gathers the ingredients, kind of throws them in a bowl, and like hands the bowl to the Last Jedi to be like, "Here, you do something with this."
Which is, I never liked that kid in school, and I don't like the Force Awakens for doing
right.
that.
And the reason why people are mad about Snoke is because there's like the Force Awakens gives grandiose to him.
Yeah,
and people speculate on what he is. You know, is he an old Sith leader? And who knows? There might be more with him in Episode 9. There might be scenes with him and like...
I heard some crazy theory that he's Mace Windu.
Oh, yeah! That's what people wanted? Fuck that!
I heard one that she was like some woman from the Phantom Menace.
Who?
Like this... Snoke.
Snoke, some woman.
Just
oh my
some,
god.
Just some character.
That's
that was
the shit
in
I'm
Tilda
talking
Swinton
about.
Because, in the bald cap.
Because she had the same, like, kind of colored outfit and just like, get fucked. If you really want
that's
that.
That's the thing. If you thought that just Mace Windu is this guy now, even though that's stupid and that's like the epitome. Of, like, a lot of this, like,
my
what
favorite
fans
scene
wanted.
In Newt Last Jedi was when Snoke looked at Kylo Ren and said, "Bitch! Like, bitch, are you for real?"
Say what again?
What's the line from... bitch, are you... No, what's the line from Kong Skull Island that made me laugh? Like,
I don't know. You guys haven't shown me Kong Skull
Island. It might have been, "Bitch, are you for real?"
"Bitch, are you for real?" Or...
Yeah.
No, "Bitch, please!" Or something like that. He said something like that, right?
We've already spent, like, 30 seconds too long talking about Kong Skull Island.
Yeah, we have.
But it's like, I just gotta say, like, I gotta reinforce this. All of the things that people wanted for this movie are dumb.
Fun fact, not everyone who sees Star Wars is a screenwriter.
No, they're not. It's like,
not just because you put storyteller on your resume, it does not mean you're a storyteller.
Wattpad counts for shit.
Well, this is part of why I kind of... Why I prefer to just kind of enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like nowadays, because of social media, not to be like that old guy, because I use social media all the fucking time, but I will say that because of it, a lot of speculation happens.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be for Lost, or Walking Dead, or Game of Thrones, Avengers, everything. You know, just like, oh, you have those fucking reaction videos that are just like, here's all the things you missed in the Avengers Infinity War trailer.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just want to watch the movie.
Yeah.
Is that a red hat in that trailer? Reference to Howard the Duck. Is Howard the Duck going to be in Avengers 4?
There's a duck.
Fuck you. You'll see it anyway.
No, did you know that Peter Parker like goes to a park and there's a duck in the background? Did you know that?
There's an old person feeding ducks in the pond.
It's me.
Is one of them Howard? We don't know.
Who? We don't fucking know. I hope so.
My wife, Laverne, left me. Please come back.
Anyway, here's Rocket Rider.
So, like, I mean, like, I for one, enjoy speculating about Avengers, but they're going to throw shit at me that I'm not expecting, though.
Like, within reason, though.
Yeah.
But you're not one of those people that when something like that happens, like, something you're wondering will happen. Because I think that's the difference.
Yeah.
You're not one to go, like, this will happen.
Oh, yeah.
This better happen, which I think...
Oh, no. I never do, like, this better happen.
Like, yeah. Like, it's like, yeah. I think that's the thing we need to, like, take a step back and just kind of let people just make their movies.
Yeah.
We can criticize them if they're not good.
Yeah.
I mean...
Lord knows we've done it.
Yeah, I mean, that's still a thing you can do. But I just want people's, like... I think we need to hold criticisms and opinions to a little bit higher of standard.
It feels like movie audiences are kind of treating movies like TV shows more. Like, they're treating them more like intimate things. Like, back when, like, Deadpool was about to come out, there was, like, that petition to... We need to get, a PG-13 cut of this movie because my 8-year-old son wants to see it, and I don't want to tell him he can't see a movie about this superhero.
Speaking of petitions.
Yeah, there is a petition for this one. But, like,
It got taken down.
There was hundreds of people. Hundreds!
Well, the guy who started it eventually was like, listen, I was not well when I made that. Let's just take it down.
No, kidding.
Like, he's like, I hate this movie, but this doesn't do anything. And then there was a backlash against him for taking it down.
Oh.
The internet from orbit. It's a horrible place.
I'm just saying, if you make a petition based on, like, a popular movie, just don't.
If you make an online petition, just don't.
Well, like, I feel like...
It's trying to, like, hey, this movie needs to be more of what I want it to be.
Yeah.
Like, change it, or I hate it. Like Deadpool. Well, like, make it a PG-13 movie, because my kid wants to see it, but I don't want to tell him no.
Your kid is dumb.
Fuck you for... popping up that kid.
I would say the parent is dumb in that. That's a parent who refuses to say no to their kid.
That kid is probably dumb too. He probably eats paste. I don't know.
But I mean, that's what I'm kind of
setting him up for failure, Neil.
I don't know. Like, when I hear about, like, oh, like, the movie better be this with Star Wars, it reminds me of the Deadpool petition.
Right.
It was like, change the movie because, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
like, I should have the power to change this movie. Like, you know, movies are not freaking, like, it's art. It's not like a democratic election.
Yeah.
You know, like, you should have the power to choose, like, who makes laws and stuff, not, you know, what an artist can do with their media.
Well, that's been a thing with Star Wars for a while, too, because remember there was that whole debate about, like, does Star Wars belong to the fans or does it belong to George Lucas?
George Lucas versus George Lucas.
So it's kind of that, but, like, now he's not even part of the equation necessarily.
No, he's not.
So it's just kind of like a carryover of that. But I think it's a lot of that same kind of mentality.
It does bring up a weird gray area. Like, I remember like South Park kind of talking about that and saying like, oh, well, once you put a movie out there, it's for the people now. And that was kind of their argument for why you shouldn't like do all the fucking special editions that George Lucas did. It's like, technically it was kind of his thing. Does he have the right to change it, or is it like, does it belong to the audience now that it's out there?
And I think
it's a weird gray area.
In the case of George Lucas, I think the real mistake he made was just getting rid of the original cuts of the movie.
Yeah,
this is the cut. Like,
that was his cardinal sin.
It is that kind of weird kind of thing where, well, if he did just leave the original versions, then why would people get the special editions? You know, which kind of makes the special editions seem that much more superfluous because...
Well, when you look at the updated effects, they are.
Well, and it just shows that George Lucas was like, well, if I want people to get these, I have to make sure they can't get these.
Mm.
And so what happened.
Well, you know, of course, anyone who remembers this remembers that... Anyone who knows anything about this sort of stuff remembers that, you know, in 2004 when they released the special editions on DVD, they did include the original cuts of the film completely untouched. Mm-hmm. Not remastered in any way, shape, or form. No, this is not a good thing. Yeah. Grain and all.
Yeah.
Poppy audio and mm-hmm. all. It was disgusting.
Yeah.
It was really bad. And it was basically like a giant middle finger to the fans.
Hmm.
It was like, here's what you want. And it was like, this is really passive aggressive, George, I gotta say.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyways.
Snoke. It's an interesting discussion, though, with, like, you know, especially with, like, you know, once it's out there, it belongs to the fans. Like, I kind of feel like I would agree with that if the fans weren't being so shitty now.
Yeah. If I didn't kind of want nothing to do with the fans.
Yeah.
I don't want to be included in them. It's like, no, guys, I've touched a boob before. They're great.
Mm. So, anyway, Snoke dies. He's dealt with. I'm glad because it just kind of makes Kylo, like, the de facto villain.
Yeah. Well, it
simplifies it.
Well, it removes an unnecessary component.
Yeah.
Regardless of anyone's feelings.
It still
kind of
makes it worthwhile because then it leads into the whole, like, one of the best scenes of the fucking movie.
Oh.
The lightsaber fight where, like, not between Rey and Kylo, but when they're fighting off Snoke's soldiers. Mwah.
I needed a cigarette after
that. Yeah, like it's like the best fucking Star Wars laser sword fight. Since probably Jedi, I guess.
It was so insanely satisfying.
Return of the Jedi.
So good.
Certainly better than the ones in the prequels.
There's
probably some people that love those, but they're wrong.
Well, we don't have to worry about them. It's fine.
They're well choreographed.
They go on for, like, they're so awesome because they go on for, like, 20 minutes. They're so choreographed. It's like they practiced it for hours.
But, hey, they're dual-bladed lightsabers.
Hey. That one's the least egregious. Like, Phantom Menace, ironically, has probably the best, like, choreographed lightsaber fight, which is, you know, the Darth Maul one. And they just kind of get stupider and stupider.
Yeah.
Where, like, in Attack of the Clones doesn't Anakin dual wield.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, and fucking sucks, and Christopher Lee cuts off his arm.
Yeah. I did own that toy, though, and it was great, and his arm did come off.
Yeah, and then that's when you get Yoda fighting.
I'd rather just forget that.
Speaking of which, Yoda.
Yoda shows
Yoda.
Up.
And Yoda shows up!
Yoda shows up, and he's a puppet.
And it's delightful.
He's a puppet, and it's great.
And it's not the Phantom Menace puppet.
It's not the CG.
Well, the CG, like, CG Yoda was always fine in the prequels. I think it really starts to, like, the one time was that fight scene, where just, like, Christopher Lee, and then, like, a little green dot floating around him, and it's weird. He's probably one of the better parts of the prequels, by and large, is Yoda.
Yeah. I really didn't care for his fight scene in Revenge of the Sith, but that was because it was clear they were trying to replicate the excitement from Attack of the Clones' fight scene. They're just like, well, we're going to make it even better. It's like, no, you can't, because it was a surprise. It wasn't even that cool in retrospect.
Well, they spoiled it
in
a trailer.
Yeah.
And they had a TV spot where they was like, yeah, Yoda's got to fight in this one.
Yeah. Ugh. And it's just like,
so cool.
And it's
trying to remember the few images of these fights that I can. But my mind keeps going to freaking Soul Calibur.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah. Oh my God.
But yeah, Yoda's a puppet in this, and it's delightful.
Yeah.
And it's like a great little continuation of him in the original trilogy.
Yep.
Where basically, and he has one of the themes of the movie, which is failure is the greatest teacher.
Yeah.
And it's like, as I know Neil and I had talked about before, excuse me, failure is a theme in this movie. Like, it's people fail at shit. Like,
it's almost like it's the overarching theme of the
film. One of my big problems with Force Awakens, and I'm just going to apologize right now because I was one of those obnoxious people that was claiming, you know, Mary Sue for Rey, because she succeeds at everything she tries in that movie, and she has no weaknesses.
Yeah.
It's okay, Steven. No one's perfect.
I know, right?
Except Rey.
So, yeah, in Last Jedi, she fails at a few things she tries. She also, like the movie kind of sold me in this one bit between her and Luke, when Luke kind of starts begrudgingly training her a bit. And, you know, he's like, all right, kneel down, close your eyes. Now reach out, and, like, she interprets it literally and actually physically reaches out, and then Luke just, like, you know, like messes with her with like a large blade of grass or something, and just starts like, you know, rubbing her hand with it. Did you feel that? I do feel it. It's, that's the force. Oh, it's really strong with you. And then just like bats her hand away. It's, and it's like, okay, like if you're, like if you're kind of afraid of making Rey like flawed or whatever, at least have like fun with her. At least like
they have
show
more fun with her in this one.
Like, have more levity. Not like, you know, she's no, like she doesn't feel like, you know, the Jesus of this movie anymore. Mm-hmm. And that was always the aspects of like Superman that kind of kept me from liking Superman until I got older. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, show me him as like a normal person.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of do the Jesus stuff when I relate to him. And with Rey, that's kind of what they did. It's like Jesus, she's perfect in the first one. Now they're kind of showing her more as like
average.
Which
I think is a product of the pacing.
Yes.
Like the first one, we don't get a lot of slow, quiet moments with Rey. Mm-hmm. It's just like bullet train. And then this one, she doesn't like quote unquote do anything. Like there's no real action with her outside of training with Luke for a good chunk of this movie. Which,
until she leaves Luke.
Until she
like
leaves
maybe
Luke.
Like halfway into the movie, then she kind of does some stuff with Kylo, and then.
It's more just her just kind of like dealing with stuff and talking to different characters and bouncing off them, whether it be Luke or Kylo. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of fun there. And we get like, so, you know, there's this whole plot line about the original Jedi texts her in this little shrine on the island. And, you know, does Luke want to burn them from the beginning?
I don't remember if he wants to from the beginning, but he eventually lands on like.
Yeah. Well, he eventually lands on that.
Yeah, and that's when Yoda shows up. And it's,
well, like
it's
from the beginning, he believes that the Jedi needs to end.
Yeah,
like the Luke in this movie, I don't know like how much it differs from the original trilogy, but Luke's general opinion is that it's kind of arrogant to believe that the Force like belongs to the Jedi, that only like Jedi masters should be able to do it.
Yeah.
Because obviously like Darth Vader has had it. Obviously people on the dark side have had it. So it's kind of arrogant to think that, oh, if the Jedi die, then like the Force goes with it or something.
And I kind of like thinking about the movie, I kind of read that as like you can replace Jedi with Skywalkers.
Yeah.
And that's kind of another thesis in the movie because, you know, spoilers, Luke disappears and dies, quote-unquote, at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you have one Skywalker left, which is Leia, which, you know, rest in peace, Carrie Fisher. She's not going to be in the new one. There's going to be some, hopefully, well-put-together way to kind of give Princess Leia an exit. And there you go. So now you're kind of back with these characters, and I think that's, obviously, that's that progressive way forward.
Well, I remember seeing the original New Hope, and like I remember it kind of being described, like the Force being described as sort of like the life energy that's around. It's like a sci-fi equivalent of like chi energy.
Well, yeah,
in like Eastern philosophies. So for me, I was always kind of bummed when like it was literally just the Skywalkers, Luke and Anakin, and then like Obi-Wan. So it's like, all right, is Obi-Wan like an uncle? Is he like Uncle Ben? No, but he was just a crazy guy in the desert in the first one, right?
And he's not related to them.
He's not related. That's what I was trying to remember, if Ben was like an uncle. Okay, he was just a crazy guy in the desert. Luke's uncle and aunt that he's living with. They're like, oh, that's just crazy Ben over there, right? Okay, all right.
So, I think a big reason why there's that is because there's no other Jedi in that original trilogy besides Obi-Wan and Luke.
Yeah.
You know, because they're all dead because of the prequels.
Mm.
And that might be, I guess, one of the positives, the few positives of watching the prequels first.
Weren't there other, like, Force wielders in the prequels, though? Like, other Jedi that that shit.
Oh yeah, there's all sorts. That's like the plot of the prequels is like the fall of the Jedi.
Okay.
They're gone more or less. That's why there's the return of the Jedi.
Right, gotcha.
Because it's literally Luke becoming a Jedi.
New Hope is like the spark that kind of
So essentially. So in the original trilogy, it's not just them, like That's not the rules. It just is that because that's who
those
we,
are the ones
we follow.
Yeah.
Right. So now it's like, oh shit, there's other Force wielders now. And I think that's one of the cool themes that I like too, is how you, and this can get into another spoiler, which is a mystery box thing, which is Rey's parentage and how that was such a big fucking thing in the original one. Like, who's your parent? And then this one is basically like, they're nobody's.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
Because.
Kylo Ren has this moment where he talks to her and it's like, you've seen your past, you like, whatever. Like, they were junkers that probably just couldn't afford to raise you. Search your feelings, you know it to be true, whatever. Like whatever paraphrase of that dialogue.
They're probably in a pauper's grave.
Yeah. Yep.
Stuff like that. And
they sold you for booze money.
And to be honest, that's good for Rey's character.
It is.
Because it means she's not just great because her lineage.
She's not great just because she was destined to be great.
Right. She's great because she is who she is. And that's a more... Yeah. That's a better characterization. That's a better route to take the character. And, so...
I think that's just like a rising trend in movies. We seem to be kind of going through like a film movement that's kind of rejecting destiny and just inner greatness, or predestined greatness, you know. It's kind of like the rise of like the commoner as like as the hero,
things
coming from little people.
And I hope that resonates a lot too with people because of all the political climate and stuff, because that's also like the theme of the movie. Like a lot of the, like Rose and Finn, Rose is just, you know, some deckhand on the ship, and she has a major role in the movie.
Yep.
She does some great shit. It's great. But I forgot my point earlier. I like how now we have this kind of contrasting ideals on lineage between Kylo and Rey.
Yeah.
And how Kylo's whole thing is that he is the product of a lineage. He is, you know, a Skywalker. He's the grandson of Darth Vader. So that's what he's obsessed about. And now we have Rey, who is his, you know, rival enemy, who is all about, it's just me, I'm just me, I don't have special parents that gave me Jesus powers, you know.
Like, was it Hulk? A Hulk?
Film Crit Hulk,
who kind of, like, came to the theory that, like, Kylo Ren is kind of the embodiment of the Star Wars fans who hate this movie.
Maybe. I didn't see that part. I will say, Film Crit Hulk, you should follow them on Twitter.
Well, he says, like, Kylo Ren is basically the idea of, like, he's the one that cares all about lineage. And, like, he is like, oh, well, like, I'm great. But because you're a, like, Rey, because you're a nothing, like, you deserve to be by my side, or maybe like just under me, like as we take over everything, but you know, under me because I'm destined to be great.
Exactly. I will say, shout out to Film Crit Hulk. He has a really good essay. They have a really good essay about the Last Jedi and why it improves a lot on The Force Awakens. Even and like how the again, another theme is like what Luke was talking about, how the Force is counted to everyone, and how the film literally ends with a kid that we see in an earlier subplot, you know, who's just kind of this lowly kid that like cleans up a stall at like a galactic racetrack.
Yeah.
And we just see that, oh, like, and it's like really subtle thing. Like he just like pulls the broom towards him with the Force. And he moves
the broom, like, literally 4 inches.
Yeah.
It's enough that you can see it. Like, oh, that kid's got the Force or whatever. Yeah, or he's Force-sensitive, whatever it's called.
Visual storytelling.
What the
fuck? And then it literally ends with him looking up in the sky. And it's like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. It's hope.
Yep.
It's another character that can use the Force that's not a Skywalker.
Yeah. There you go. So... is there any other spoilery things we want to talk about? I'm
a little tired of porgs.
Says the one person on the planet.
They
fuck
serve
you,
no
Steven.
Purpose to the plot.
I bet they taste delicious.
They're just there to be cute. At least the crystal foxes had something to do with the plot.
A little bit.
What did the porgs do other than...
I don't even remember the fucking point of the crystal foxes.
Well, they
lead them down that fucking hole?
It's there so that they have an exit, basically. Yeah.
I don't mind porgs that much. They don't bother me too much. They didn't come across as horribly cynical to me. Like, they're not like Olaf from Frozen, less cynicals.
I don't know. Like I
you
said,
you could take them completely out of the movie and you wouldn't change anything.
Yeah, but well, I mean, like,
I'm, yeah, but I mean,
but I still like them though. Like the fact that I've told you this before. Like I can count the number of minutes of screen time they take up on one hand.
Mm.
That's fine. It's not too bad. I like them. I thought they were cute. I like the scene where Chewbacca's about to eat
about
one.
About to eat one?
Right in front of
that it. That scene's pretty great. Come
it's
on.
Good. But like, other than that, they're fine.
Yeah, other than that, it's just like, oh, here's a shot of one squawking, and here's one,
They're there mostly to just kind of further the admittedly small theme of, like, animal cruelty.
A little bit.
Like, there's the horse things that are kind of abused.
Yeah, we've kind of skirted over one of the other kind of...
This movie's version of the cantina scene, like, they build it up, like, in here are, like, the worst people ever. And rather than it being, like, scum and villainy, it's, like, the richest people in the galaxy who, like, make their money by
war,
selling
war
weapons.
Profiteers.
War profiteers.
Yeah.
Which...
Social commentary.
I don't dislike that scene. I know a lot of people were kind of like, and I think...
Oh, okay.
I think people were right in saying it does kind of stop the movie dead.
It does.
You know, but I'm glad it's in there because it adds a little bit to the themes and the kind of... It does pay off in the end.
Yeah, it does kind of the thing that I liked with Rogue One, which is like it kind of sheds a new shade of gray into the series where it's like, of course a military-industrial complex would exist in this universe. Why haven't we talked about it before?
Speaking of shades of gray, Benicio Del Toro, best character in the movie. Also, one of the more interesting characters in the movie with a distinctive personality. And I wish there were more people like Benicio Del Toro in these Star Wars movies.
I like Benicio Del Toro in this one. I like him.
He's slowly becoming one of my favorite actors.
He's great. He's great. But I don't know. I feel like there's not too much to say about it, because Lord knows, it's the thing that everyone's fucking talking about, and it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, there are legit complaints about it, but also, like, I appreciate what the purpose that... It's more thematic than anything.
It's thematic.
It's very thematic.
It's there for a reason. It's not perfect by any means. It is pretty flawed, but I think that...
At least it's not filler.
Yeah.
Like, someone will probably argue it's filler.
Yeah, it's not filler.
But they at least develop characters during
it's
it.
It's slower.
It's slower.
It's not filler.
Its biggest crime is that it's not as good as the other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It does reek a bit of giving Finn something to do, which is something that I had a problem with back in Force Awakens, where, like, my brother and I have had constant talks about this, where it's like, I like Finn a lot as a character. I like him a lot more than Rey in The Force Awakens because he has, like, a distinctive personality. He actually comes from something. He's actually undergoing, like, a struggle. He changes. But after that first half of the movie, why is he there?
Yeah.
He does not serve any real purpose.
That's a big thing that frustrated me about Rey's perfection, is that it kind of just cuts off his character arc.
Exactly. He's there to get inside the Star Killer base and whatever, but that's like it.
Yeah, it's like, I get it. I think that they just desperately wanted the word damsel to never come into the conversation when it came to Rey.
Yeah.
But as a result, Finn is useless.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm gonna go save her. Oh, she's
too perfect.
She's doing it. Oh, I'm gonna fight this lightsaber battle. I'm gonna get my ass kicked.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's useless and she's too perfect. You've kind of committed, like, two of the cardinal sins.
Whereas Rey, it succeeds at everything she tries. Finn kind of fails at everything he tries in the movie.
And then on top of that, he doesn't serve a purpose and she just solves everything. It's Deus Ex Rey. Whereas in
Rey is Ex Machina.
God damn it. Fine, we'll go with that one.
Yeah!
It's fine. Directed by Steven Ingram, alright. Whereas in Last Jedi, you know, it still kind of covers over there. They don't kill off Finn. They don't kill him off. And I'm still of two minds about it. I know some people are like, well, you know, it gives his character purpose. And I agree. It gives his character a greater purpose. But on the other hand, I like that we kept him alive because we get the really lovely theme, or like a thesis statement of, you know, we win by saving the things we love, not by destroying the things we hate. Which also, I know some people are now turning on that, and I'm like, you shut your fucking mouths.
Also,
it's lovely.
Yeah, that's a lovely line. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Also, it adds to, like, the theme that, like, Poe's subplot is
going.
It's that it's not about dumb actions of heroism. It's more about, like, smaller actions that preserve the bigger picture.
It's small acts of survival. Yeah.
There's Laura Dern's sacrifice.
Yes.
Oh!
Oh, lordy!
I... That might be my favorite scene of the year.
It's like, I know, because I like heard Neil, and it's like he orgasms.
I legit gasped.
And I was like, yeah. You know what? Good for you, Neil.
I legit gasped.
Yeah, he's like,
and
oh.
I was like,
this movie is kind of interesting because, like I remember when we saw Shin Godzilla, and, like, I was kind of enjoying it just for, like, the different experience that it is. Because, like, in, like, Eastern culture, it's kind of like, it's more about, like, well, together, like, Japan can accomplish this.
Right.
Whereas opposed to, like, Western culture, it's all about the individual. Yeah, it's all about one man must save the world. And it's always, like...
The chosen one, yeah.
It's always
why we elect
our
president.
So on the one hand, Last Jedi is kind of, like, it's more about, like, no, it's not dumb acts of heroism. But at the same time, it does kind of show a lot of instances where it was one person that made a huge difference.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of interesting that it's a different take on that.
Right. And I believe Leia says at some point, it's like, it's about the planning of it all, too.
Yeah.
You know, excuse me, like, Luke goes in with a plan.
He does.
When he does it. Laura Dern has a plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about just going, you know, having the hero moment.
Yeah. Because
that's how the movie starts.
Which is what fans seem to want.
Yeah, they want that. And it's like...
Yeah, I think that's what I was kind of saying earlier, is that a lot of what people were expecting or anticipated or really wanted is the exact opposite of what the themes would require.
Yeah.
But yeah, Laura Dern's sacrifice looks
cool. Oh my!
That's when you know this movie's made by a visual storyteller.
I was very satisfied with the whole like subverting the expectations. Like I was genuinely thinking, like, really is her plan to just stay the course and not change anything?
Mm-hmm.
I'm mad. I side with Poe on this, and then it's like, oh no, what? They pulled the rug out from under me.
The Spanish Inquisition.
Like I genuinely enjoy being wrong about the things that like I'm rolling my eyes, thinking, oh, this is so predictable.
Yeah.
I enjoy being wrong.
I'll just say this: like I regularly jerk off to a picture of a copy of Blade Runner 2049 on Blu-ray.
I bought a poster for him, and I'm sure he's jacked off to it like 7,000 times.
Don't go near it.
That picture it has a lot of blue, orange, and Milky Way.
Ooh.
Man, that Milky White does not discriminate in any of this.
I think we put glass over it, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. It cleans off very easily.
That's
why
you asked me where the Windex was.
But I'm really racking my brain. Because, like, the reason I bring it up is because 2049 has so many, like, stunning images in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think The Last Jedi might have actually topped it.
It's fucking great.
And that is hard for me to admit that my favorite movie of the year. It's like Star Wars passed it in like one visual. Like it kind of beat all the other visuals in 2049. Just by a little bit.
Yeah.
Not by a whole lot. But it's like I keep bringing up other things like, you know, oh, what about the opening opening establishing shot of the colonies in 2049? Oh, well, what about the holograph of Joy? Oh, what about the image of like just radiated Las Vegas? What about the image of like the ship that's going over the dead? The old company that made the replicants?
Oh yeah,
and then like in the like as like it's getting enveloped in the frame by the Wallace Building, which is such a perfect visual metaphor for like that person's dead. This one's even bigger. It's like, God damn, Deakins, he's so good. It makes me want to tear my hair out. And yet, Last Jedi with that image.
Well, I think what makes it work a lot is that it takes something that we're super familiar with, the warp drive.
Yes.
Going into hyperspace.
And something that
we does something we've never seen before with it.
Yes.
And that's what is fucking awesome.
And also, because you've taken that time with that scenario, it has a payoff.
That's a very
it
big
feels
payoff.
Earned. Yeah. That's why you take your time with movies and pacing.
And why you have setup and payoff.
Yeah.
In the same movie.
As opposed to just constant payoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or constant setup.
Yeah.
I will quickly just throw in like on a note of more interesting characters in this one. Domhnall Gleeson. He was delightful.
He was. He was.
He was delightful as Space Nazi.
Yeah, he was.
As Casey.
Exactly.
Neil Patrick Harris from Starship Troopers.
Exactly.
As played by Casey.
As played by Casey.
Yeah. I feel like he played it a little more broad in this one, but also that's probably for the best because his character is a sniveling weasel of a coward.
Yeah.
Like and it works.
Yeah. I love when he walks in and, like, he sees Snoke dead and he sees Kylo Ren, like, out cold, and he, like, reaches for his weapon, and then Kylo Ren gets up, and then just pulls his hand back.
His hand
like, that's a weaselly thing to do.
That is his character encapsulated in one image, and it's great. It's almost like, you know, visual storytelling pays off.
It's almost like Rian Johnson's good at what he does.
Yeah.
Almost.
All right.
So,
is there anything else we want to talk about? Any other little things you want to reference to?
Rose is great. Kelly Marie Tran is
wonderful.
Shout out
to her.
We don't deserve her.
We don't deserve her.
Funny enough, you were mentioning that she was in like College of Humor.
She was on like Adam's Ruins Everything or something.
Last night when I was in the kitchen as I was waiting for something to cook, a College Humor video auto-played on my phone. She was one of the people.
Yay.
In there. So it's funny that you mentioned it yesterday.
She's great.
Yeah, it paid off. Yeah. She's great. She's a good character. I hope to see more from her. Final thoughts on the movie, you know, that not much has changed since, you know, when we started the podcast. I love it.
Spoilers, I hate it now.
Yeah.
Well, that would be kind of believable. A little more than the other two of us.
7 out of 10, fuck it. I like this movie. 7 out of 10, here's why it's wrong.
Join us in part 7 of Last Jedi, where Neil just lists off how all the porgs needed one extra webbed foot.
Fried chicken, chicken fried rice, wontons. Oh no, these are things that I like about food. Never mind. Sorry, guys.
They're foods that you like.
They are definitely foods that I like.
Okay,
but anybody that's like really on the fence or like really just like, I will say, man, just go see it again.
Yeah, if you're on the fence and you're not sure what you think, you know, give it another watch.
I know that...
Find a cheap matinee.
I know that times are tough. I know that time is especially tough. Like, you know, with a lot of our generations very, like, scrambling. And I know the feeling of, like, if I didn't really like something that much the first time, why on fuck am I gonna, you know, watch it again?
Well, because I think the movie's helped when you know when you have an expectation of what's gonna happen.
Yeah, rather
than... If you didn't like it because what you expected or anticipated didn't happen, mm-hmm. I would say it's worth checking out again. Like, if you were kind of more like light and disliking it because of what it could have been or what
do
it wasn't.
Do that instead of making a petition.
Yeah exactly. It's... I look forward to seeing it again. I hope we get to see it again sometime soon. It's not like Force Awakens where I've seen it 1.5 times and I've gotten literally everything I need out of that movie. This one I feel like is definitely going to pay off with multiple viewings. And I'm really excited to be able to do that. I hope that it makes money. I hope people continue to go.
Oh, it's
see
making
it.
Money.
Well, the thing is,
people give it a chance. Give this movie a chance.
This little indie movie called Star Wars: The Return of the Last Jedi.
It's the seventh biggest opening of all time. You know, just go see it. You know, just give it a chance.
It's a modest little film production company called Disney.
Independent filmmaking.
I mean,
that's all I'm saying.
I mean, you're not wrong. Johnson is an independent filmmaker. Yeah. But it's no, like the thing I'm worried about is like what the cliff is gonna be. Like what
it's gonna have Suicide Squad.
Yeah, levels. I'm worried about it's gonna have like Batman v Superman levels of like people like that.
Thankfully I had a way better opening than that.
Well thankfully that and also like the reception to that has been better. But I'm kinda worried because like one, I want Johnson to get his trilogy. I want things to pay off for the guy. He's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Really immensely talented. Could not have happened to a better guy.
And like, I'll say this too. While I know, like, J.J. Abrams is coming back for episode 9, I'm still hopeful for it because of where this movie leads off and how it's just... We don't really know where it's going.
Yeah.
Which is actually, in terms of a Star Wars movie...
Would you say it's a mystery box?
No.
You're evicted again. You're double evicted.
We don't know where it's going because it's a mystery box.
But we kind of knew where it was going. We thought we knew where it was going.
Yeah.
With The Force Awakens. But this one is just like, it's just kind of open.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, oh, there's potential there. Yeah. And like, yeah, I would totally understand if your initial reaction to J.J. Abrams coming back for episode 9 is just kind of like, ugh. But I hope he gets help.
Well, I'm hoping
that isn't Lawrence Kasdan.
Well, I'm hoping that he doesn't undo a lot of what I liked about this film. I'm worried that he's not going to go in there and say, like, actually, Kylo was lying to Rey. Her parents are really... Like, I don't want that.
These two Wookiees, that's her parents.
I don't want that at all. That's what I'm worried he's going to do. I'm worried that they're going to bow to pressure and be like, oh, her parents are actually Obi-Wan. Kylo was just lying to her to get under her skin. It's like, God, please don't do that. Mm-hmm. Please don't do that. If they do it, I'm going to leave. I don't care. I love Star Wars, but I don't
I'll
have
take
any...
I'll take you out to a nice seafood dinner and never call again.
How hits close to home. But, yeah, just go see it again. Don't let people dissuade you from seeing it if you're on the fence. You really should see it. It's a Star War, you know?
It's a goddamn Star War.
It's a worthy trip to the theater. It's a good time. You'll enjoy yourself. And, yeah, if you're on the fence, if you're kind of still searching your feelings about it, you know, after seeing it, see it again. Pay money to Star Wars. It's great. There you go. That's all I got.
What a shill you are for Disney, Neil.
I guess so.
Give your money to Star Wars.
Company NISD, it really needs some help. It really needs some help.
It's okay, Neil. Anyway, arbitrary number rating for the movie. Neil.
Oh, I'd give it a 9 out of 10.
Okay, arbitrary number rating.
I'd give it a 7.5 out of 10, or 8. Yeah.
Okay,
it's good.
Okay.
It's good. It's good.
Okay. I'll give it a 9 out of 10, too.
All right.
Yay! Better than Homecoming.
It was better than Homecoming.
Oh, shit! Ah!
Oh, yeah. Oh, anyway, I could have figured that one out.
Anyway, I don't know where to end this. Anyway, fuck you.
Follow us on Twitter, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that shit. Fuck. I haven't done this in, like, 12,000 months. Anyway.
Yeah.
Links in the description. Check out Sweet Weenie. Sweet Weenie. We're actually planning on doing shit with
We actually got some stuff coming up.
We actually recorded a new audio commentary that should be up by the time this podcast is up. And it's for Christmas. So look forward to that. And
it's
anything?
A movie I hate.
So you know it's going to be a good listen.
And yet he told me he picked that one to watch, too. I gave him a choice.
It's discussion worthy. The world needs to know my grievances with it.
Neil, plug your Twitter again.
Oh, I'm at Neil Logan Butler, N-E-I-L, for Neil.
Okay.
So you know how to spell it.
Steven.
I am on Twitter, and I'm trying to get better at Twitter. I am at Bagurpa on Twitter.
Spelled phonetically.
And at B-A-G-U-R-P-A-G-U-R-P-A at Bagurpa.
And I'm at T. Carlisle Art 4 for nobody but me. Anyway.
I made a joke in a previous episode that I was T. Carlisle Art 3, and then I realized, damn it, I had a chance to plug my Twitter.
Joke's on you, Steven. There goes that networking opportunity. Anyway, thanks for us, like, ramble like fucking idiots about a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Our first Star Wars movie we saw together in a theater.
It was lovely.
Anyway, I guess we'll remain at large or some shit.
All right, bye.
Love theme.
Fuck. All right.